Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Horse and Around podcast. I'm Andy Lindahl from Denver Sports 760 and KOA Radio, where I am your Broncos sideline reporter. I also host a talk show where Andrew Mason joined us this week. We thought we'd bring you some highlights of that as we covered everything from what happened at the NFL owners' meetings and specifically why no more Tony Romo news to what the Broncos' schedule might look like as the Broncos put a contest on their page where you could guess the schedule. It's almost like trying to pick the perfect bracket. So without further ado, here is your Horse and Around podcast. Andrew and I told you last week, I think we even mentioned it on the podcast, the only reason why we saw that anything would break free with Tony Romo at the owners' meetings would have been a trade. And nobody's trading for him. So this notion that something should have happened and now there's some other letdown because he's still stuck in Dallas, I just don't think you're paying attention to what goes on at some of these get-togethers, right?
Exactly. I mean, you might have some conversations, but I think all that was going to be revealed in those conversations, if there were chats, was what's already known. No one's trading for Tony Romo. If he's going to play for somebody else in 2017, they're going to have to let him go. And I don't think it's entirely unfeasible that he's not playing at all. That, you know, you guys have talked about this on the air, some of the reports about broadcast offers. If CBS is offering you the number one analyst role, if that's true, you have to take that, right?
Oh, Shannon Sharp did.
Yeah,
remember,
exactly.
We were all getting ready to go interview him, and he's like, bye, guys, I'm off to CBS. Oh, all right. Oh, never mind.
And it was funny because there were a lot of the players were surprised. There was one guy I remember who wasn't surprised, who understood completely. He was always a bit of a contrarian. That's why I liked him. Trevor Price.
Well,
he's like, I completely get that.
You can understand it too, right?
Yeah.
I think Trevor was probably looking for his own opportunity, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Hey, honestly, do you think the fans would they give up? Because we know, let's not act like the whole fan base wanted Tony Romo here, but we heard from plenty that said they would gladly give up their Manning 2.0 to let him go replace Sims. Why is Sims so hated in your mind?
Good question, because I've heard it from a lot of fans, as you have over the years, and I've struggled with it because when I listen to Phil Sims, I don't hear something that really gets me riled up one way or the other. Now, I mean, there are some analysts in various sports that their style
and the great song.
Well, great. Okay, I mean, Dick Vitale, for all his enthusiasm, if he's calling a Duke game, there's a reason why people call him Dookie V. Then if I can't find the mute button, I'm trying to find a brick to throw through my flat screen because I can't listen to this anymore. And Phil Sims never, as a viewer, he never elicited that sort of reaction in me, whether I've, you know, viewing it from a fan perspective, because he's been a number one analyst for a long time. I think 1995, NBC put him on the top team with Dick Enberg, and I believe Paul McGuire was with him for a few years, and then he went over to CBS. And Phil Sims is just, his opinions haven't moved me one way or the other. So I sometimes think that people confuse unbiased with having an agenda against my team.
It is funny. Romy had the greatest point yesterday. It's like he's back in the NFL, right, Rome? When he comes out and starts hearing these rumors right away. Poor Phil Sims. You got a guy that's not even retired.
I feel bad for Phil Sims. He's like, oh, okay, this guy's taking my job and he's not even retired?
Yeah.
That's great news to wake up to.
I mean, you hope for Phil's sake, if something's going on, that people are talking to him.
Yeah. You would like to believe so, right?
Yeah.
Of course. The broadcast industry.
He's making a phone call to his agent.
Of course, the broadcast industry is interesting. Look how Brent Musburger got the Ziggy from CBS when they couldn't come to a contract agreement. They announced it on, I think it was, they announced it on April Fool's Day when the Final Four was here in Denver. And because it was on April Fool's Day, nobody believed it at first. And they're like, yeah, this really happened.
No, we're not kidding.
Yeah.
This is no joke.
And then the next day, night, he goes out and calls UNLV Duke, and that's it.
He will be making inappropriate comments about another college player's girlfriend on another network. He won't be with us anymore. So, anyway.
That didn't really start until he was in his 60s or 70s, though. You know that?
Yeah, the problem is that's creepy. Maybe don't let it start at all.
The first comment, I think it was in his early 60s with the quote unquote cowgirls at Florida State. said something like calling a Florida, I believe it was a Florida State Miami game, says something like 10,000 red blooded American young males just signed, just applied to Florida State right after they showed the shot.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. When you're in your 60s, maybe let's not offer commentary on some of the game day atmosphere. How about that? How about I just put it that way? Let's just let it lie.
Sometimes it's better to just let the microphone, you know, just have a little dead air time.
Right. Let it breathe.
Let it breathe. Let the crowd noise carry it.
All right, the owners' meetings have wrapped up. Now they go into the draft bunker. Kind of explain it or give you at least your prediction for what everybody can reasonably expect over the next couple weeks until we get to draft day.
Well, players will come back to Broncos headquarters on April 10th. They can begin not only team-organized workouts, but they can also begin having football-related meetings with coaches. So you start having position group meetings every day. Now, they're not mandatory, but they're kind of unofficially mandatory. I mean, they can't, you know, almost everyone's going to be there, but certainly that's where the process for learning the new offense and the process of Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch beginning to get ingratiated in that new offense and get everything down pat, that's where it can begin. Meanwhile, in football operations and coaching, there's going to be a lot of draft meetings. When everyone gets back to the UC Health Training Center early next week, there'll be football operations and coaches. They're going to kind of go into a bunker, but they're going to have a lot of meetings, and they're really going to start formulating their draft plan based on everything they've got from combine meetings, Senior Bowl, Shrine Game meetings with scouts and personnel guys, starting to have some of the individual meetings like with Joe Mixon that they had a couple of weeks back, and then they'll have some more individual meetings at Bronco headquarters in the next few weeks as well. Between that, everything they got out of the pro days, having their scouts fanned out around the country the last few weeks, really start getting that draft board together. Take all that intel, put it together, start making your board. And then you also have mock drafts internally where you say, okay, if it goes this way, how do we react? How do we react to this situation, that situation? So a lot on their plate the next few weeks.
Ultimately, in your mind, we're in the quiet phase of free agency now, right? We'll see some sporadic signings, but outside of that, not much really left to go, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see holes filled around the league. Now, it'll be interesting to see how the Broncos perceive left tackle. As John Elway and Vance Joseph said, if the season started today, you're looking at Donald Stevenson or Menelik Watson as the left tackle. But I kind of equate this situation to back in 2013 after the fax snafu regarding Elvis Dumervil. So that gave them a big, fat, gaping hole at one of those defensive end spots in the 4-3. And the Broncos did not opt to fill it before the draft, and everyone went into the draft thinking, oh, well, they got to draft an edge rusher. That's the priority. But they draft an interior guy, Sylvester Williams. So the first day of the 2013 draft ends, and the next day, Sean Phillips is visiting Broncos headquarters. You know, a lot of names have come through the Broncos and through any team over the last few years, so maybe some people have forgotten about Sean Phillips. But that year gave them 10 sacks, and they'd agreed to terms with Sean Phillips before the draft had even ended when they didn't get that immediate starter as an edge rusher out of the draft, and he was productive. So and what happens with the market, because it slows down, a lot of those veterans that are out there now are going to be out there in 2 or 3 weeks, and they're going to, and then you see movement on some of them after the draft. The other thing to remember, I mean, you know, how cool John Elway is going to be at this and how calm he is about the left tackle situation. Although it wasn't ideal for the offensive line in 2015, the starter for most of that season was Ryan Harris. He didn't come aboard until late May after Ryan Clady had his ACL injury. So they intend to start Tyson Brillo for a while. So they can be pretty patient, and they can maybe even have a left tackle vacancy going into the draft, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to pick a left tackle. You know, it might be a little bit of draft misdirection like we often see.
Yeah, I would hope. Are you predicting a left tackle vacancy as we go into the draft? Should we all be ready for that? Or?
I wouldn't be surprised if it has not been filled by then. Now, I would also given some of the moves they made last year a week before the draft, re-signing Ronnie Hillman just to make sure you were covered at running back, adding a couple of veteran safeties just to make sure you were covered at safety, just in case. In that, because of that, I could still see them adding a left tackle before the draft just to make sure, okay, we've got everything squared away, but they could go in the other direction too.
What did you take most from the owners' meetings? What was your biggest takeaway from that get-together? Was there a surprise one for you?
I really thought that they would pass the overtime changes, shortening it 10 minutes. And it's been tabled. It's going to come up at the next owners' meeting. The interesting thing with that is a lot of profound changes. You get a preseason experiment. Remember, there was a preseason experiment with the PATs being pushed back before we saw it in regular season play, and even at 33, and even with something like touchbacks being out to the 25, they're going to do another year. But think back to the PAT they did it in the preseason, and then they put it in the regular season. The problem is there's no such experimental period possible for overtime at 10 minutes as opposed to 15, because who wants preseason overtime
right.
in any way, shape, or form? So if they commit to a 10-minute overtime in the regular season, it's going to be something that they're not going to have any data going in. They're just going to have to cross that Rubicon, even if it's a one-year experiment, and say, we're going to do this differently, and let's see how it happens in the regular season. There is no preseason experimentation for it, and I wonder if the lack of preseason experimentation is one reason why we didn't see that passed and why they opted to table it until the next meeting.
Mace, do you feel like the NFL would ever adopt the college overtime policies? A lot of people don't like the sudden death, at least give each team a chance.
There's no momentum for that. And it's because it's the college overtime format is considered too different than how the game is actually played. As in starting everybody at the 25-yard line. You have the same kind of objections that you do in baseball to the notion of having extra innings, how they propose starting with a man on second or a man on third or both. I don't like those because it messes up how you play the game. And that's my problem with college overtime is it's a very contrived format because you're starting everybody at the 25, and it leads to some scores that are out of whack. There's even there's a more radical proposal out there in the public sphere than even that. I think it's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, actually suggested having, four 2-point conversion plays for each team. One team goes, then the other team goes. Kind of like a soccer penalty kick type thing.
Well, that's boring.
I only think that's a good idea if you've played a 15-minute period of overtime. Because in soccer, you play 30 minutes of extra time, and then you get to the penalty kicks. So to me, something like that 2-point conversion idea, or the college overtime where it's at the 25-yard line, those are last-ditch options to break a tie. You do that after a proper overtime period, just as soccer does penalties after a proper extra time.
It's hard because, there's a part of me that likes the college feel. There's a part of me that just wants to see normal football played like they're striving for. I guess for the longest time until the Super Bowl, I was okay with if you can't stop a touchdown, then I guess just bad on you, right? Don't let it get to overtime. But, man, it was tough to see Matt Ryan never take the field in the Super Bowl to decide the biggest game, and I just don't know where the perfect answer is.
I like ensuring that teams have one possession, and then after that, it's sundown. That's the way arena football did it for a long time. Each team had one opportunity to possess the football, and after that, then it was sudden death.
Yeah.
That I'd be okay with, to where first team drove for a touchdown, other team gets a chance, because what happens is only half the people are deciding a game like Super Bowl 51, and a big part of that decision was because frankly the Falcons defense was absolutely gassed because they'd been out there extensively. Now obviously it's a whole team. Hey, get it done. And I understand people saying, oh, get it done in regulation. I get that. But still, if you're going to break a tie forced over 60 minutes, I'd like to see both teams have a shot at the ball.
I absolutely agree. And I think even, like you said, after the second team gets a try, if the first team gets a field goal, the second team gets a touchdown, mm-hmm. game over.
Right.
You know, but the fact that the second team doesn't get an opportunity if the team scores a touchdown is just that. I feel like it's unfair and it's not what you want to see, especially if it's like the last game of the Super mm-hmm. Bowl, you know, and you're watching your team and it's heartbreaking. They didn't get that opportunity, but maybe they could have.
They
right?
could. Exactly. And I recall sitting in the press area at Super Bowl 51 and I got out my binoculars and I was just looking at the Falcons on the sideline, looking at their offensive players. And by the time the Patriots got to midfield, you could see the shoulders start slumping as if they all knew we're not going to get a chance. Justifiably so, because the Falcons defense had been on the field way too much and they were just tired.
Well, I wouldn't even be opposed to the fact, and I know people don't like this and the NFL certainly doesn't want to do this, but to me, I feel like when it comes to your playoffs and your championship, if new rules are required, new rules are required. Hockey plays full periods until sudden death or whatever. They don't go to shootouts, so mm-hmm. on and so forth. And look, they become marathons sometimes.
But become classics.
You're right.
Everyone, when a game goes triple overtime, everyone remembers it.
Well, and to me, in the Super Bowl, I almost feel like you just have to repeat a fourth quarter.
And I feel like, you know, even if, kind of along what you're saying, okay, if you don't want to do it during regular season, okay, but for playoffs, the Super Bowl, for big games like that, there has to be an opportunity for both teams.
Both teams should mm-hmm. touch the football in that type of scenario. And it's maybe just too important.
And maybe that's the next step, that when you're talking about postseason football, you guarantee equality of opportunity.
Yep.
Maybe that's a solution to this. And then, I mean, I'm not opposed to a 10-minute overtime in the regular season, but that being said, they say that the proposal is made in the name of player safety, fewer hits, etc. If that's the case, why have overtime at all?
Yeah, just call it a tie.
Just call it a tie.
And you know
on.
What you're going against, yeah. right? Yeah. This is your Prince song?
Oh.
This is a great song.
This is. I'm so glad that you
Kevin
this.
Steveson feeling saucy.
I'm so glad you played this because this reminds me, Mason Andrew Mason's with us now from DenverBroncos.com and the sports guru overall in life. So Mace, we were talking about Super Bowl this year's in Minnesota.
Yes.
Do you have any early predictions for who the halftime show could be, and if somehow someone did a Prince tribute, perhaps, who would that be?
Wow.
You know,
are we not at the point where we can't just get like take a Prince concert, create some holograms off of it, get the sound, and have that be the show?
I'm fine with that. You know what they should do is they should just reenact his one from, was it 2007?
Yes, best Super Bowl halftime show ever.
Ever. Mm-hmm. That's what they should do, but with a hologram. Those holograms are weird.
I could see them doing that.
But yeah.
I could see them doing that.
There's just the problem is, I mean, you had Lady Gaga at Super Bowl 51, and she was terrific. It was an amazing show to witness in person. But there are not many acts that are relevant today, but have crossover.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the way music is consumed, the way media is consumed today. It's, you know, more balkanized, narrower audiences, a lot of niches. And that's why for years the league went with the older act of the, you know, flavor of the moment. That's why they cycled through U2, Rolling Stones. Even Prince qualified as kind of that older act when he performed at Super Bowl 41. Man, I don't know what they're going to do. The options are pretty limited, I'd say, at this point.
Well, and we have to see who's putting out a new album.
I'm fine with Lady Gaga again. As far as I'm concerned, she can do the next Super Bowl next 10 Super Bowl halftimes. I'll be happy.
Yeah, you know, I would agree. Because I think with the thing with Lady Gaga, and it was like that with Katy Perry too, it's not just that they're singing, they're entertainers.
Yes.
It's almost a variety show. So there's not a lot of artists that kind of use all that creativity, and you really have to get that or the shows are really boring.
And I wonder how many new fans Lady Gaga created when she did Super Bowl 50's National Anthem. I think a lot of people who, you know, maybe who were of older generations and hadn't heard of her, heard her belt out that anthem and said, wow, what else has this lady done?
We all remember Wade Phillips said, and we got to see Lady Gaga.
Exactly.
He was very excited about that. there's so many directions we have to go now because Romy just retweeted something that I saw, and you seem to me to be a connoisseur of ballpark treats.
Yes.
So we'll have to bounce this one off you to see if you would eat it. But first and foremost, before Romy gives you the ultimate bracket, we've got to ask you, again, your DenverBroncos.com, we've got it up on our webpage as well, a link to it. You can go and enter in the contest to guess the schedule. It's kind of like filling out your bracket.
Do
but
it
you
today.
Guess the schedule. Do,
Do
it today.
Do it today, folks. Do it today.
Go to DenverBroncos.com. It's one of the sidebars there. Who do you think? We've been trying to figure the opener. Now, here's my thing. Here's been my quick logic. I feel like they're due to open away. Unless somehow the Tony Romo magic happens, and to me there's maybe a 5% chance, and that might even be high, of him actually making it.
And it would
anymore.
Have to happen within the next couple
right.
of weeks, and maybe even sooner, because they're working on the schedule as we speak.
And right now, Trevor Siemian, I believe, is a starter of opening night. That's just my prediction. So with that in mind, they're probably not making Dallas-Denver one of your opening games because there won't be the natural storyline there anymore that there would be if Tony Romo were the quarterback. So with that in mind, do they? Here's the questions. Kevin threw out there, his prediction for the opener was the Chargers here, where if the Chargers open here, to me, that's the late Monday night game.
Yeah,
I think also a Bronco Raider on the road late Monday night game is in the offing, or it could be in the mix anyway.
I don't think they're going to do a primetime game in Oakland when they're potentially facing attendance issues, depending on how many refunds.
That's a great, well then, okay.
But I could see any AFC West team here as the back half of the Monday Night Football doubleheader for what would be, I believe, an 8:20 p.m. Mountain Time start.
What would they do then about the Broncos possibly going to the Chargers to open in L.A., but they're opening in a soccer stadium?
That's possible as well, but
do they want to avoid that?
Do you want to put a primetime
right,
game in that venue?
Right, that's the thing. Does the league want to minimize the exposure of a 30,000-seat stadium? And as a result, are the Chargers only playing Sunday afternoon games at StubHub? And I think there also may be some issues in terms of traffic patterns, perhaps.
Yep.
So it's entirely possible that they may not have a primetime game at home this year. And the Raiders are interesting because you have to, you know, they've offered full refunds to anyone who wants them. Certainly, that is a situation where those fans that show up, if things are not handled properly in terms of security, because we know the Raiders fan base is very much on the edge to begin with, it is a situation that could get out of control. I don't see the rate because of that. I see the Raiders only having road primetime games this year.
So that would be both of them then.
Yeah.
Both the Raiders and Chargers will not be featured at home.
Before we get back to the Broncos schedule, just Mace, I want to ask with the Chargers, why aren't they sharing the Coliseum with the Rams? I mean, just like the Jets and the Giants, why would they put them in a 30,000 seat stadium?
Because you've already got a ground share there between the Rams and USC.
Too much football.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
College game Saturdays that you never get the grass streak
right.
covered.
If you're guaranteed to have, you know, 10 Chargers games over the year, or nine if one gets plucked, nine Rams games, I think they're playing one in London again this year, if I'm not mistaken. And then SC has seven home games. Now that's 25 games on a grass field, even in Los Angeles with a very ideal climate for growing grass, you could have some problems. And if you get a rainy day, then you've messed it up for a while.
All right, we're trying to manage our time as efficiently as possible. Quickly, your prediction for the opener.
My prediction for the opener is, I'm actually going to go a little bit off the radar. I'm going to say Kansas City here, late game Monday night.
Boom.
Ooh, I like
it. Could we also see Kansas City Monday night early there as the opener?
Potentially, but you're talking about a 6 p.m. start time.
Right.
I don't see that as a likely scenario. Now, another thing that's possible, they did one year actually play the late game in Kansas City on Monday night. I think San Diego played them about a 9:15, 9:20 Central Time start. So late, but had a great atmosphere. So that could be a possibility too. But I actually think the Broncos will open at home in primetime Monday night. And it wouldn't surprise me if, because they're not maybe an A-level team coming off a 9-7 season, wouldn't surprise me if instead of having a lot of Sunday night games, Broncos have multiple Monday night games this year.
Well,
you think the Broncos will still get their, you know, the past few years they've had the max, the five games. You think they'll get get the max again?
I think they'll be below that. I think they'll be at 3 or 4.
Coming up next, Mace talks with Panthers.com's Brian Strickland and takes a look at how both Super Bowl 50 teams are in transition.
Thanks, Andy. Before I left the NFL annual meeting in Phoenix this week, I had a chance to catch up with Brian Strickland to talk about just how things have changed for the Panthers and Broncos now nearly 14 months on from their meeting in Super Bowl 50. Both teams had disappointing 2016 seasons. Both are in a state of transition, and the conversation I have with Brian follows. Brian, good to have you.
Yeah, Mace, thanks for having me. It's been an interesting few days, as it always is here at the owners' meeting. And like you said, wrapped it up. You know, for me, with Ron Rivera speaking at the breakfast this morning, that's kind of the, you know, the traditional last deal here. And, you know, no major news breaking, but still, you know, good to catch up with him out here after, you know, it was a little bit of a quiet week leading up to that, if you ask me.
It was a quiet week. I think the fact that the meetings adjourned Tuesday rather than going into Wednesday, typically you've got the last meetings on Wednesday morning and you have the sight of the fleet of black SUVs and limos out front to whisk owners and other high-ranking executives off to the airport. A little bit of a staggered departure this year because everything wrapped up on Tuesday. Some hung around until Wednesday, some didn't. But the big reason why I have Brian here with me this week, first of all, we're both here at the annual meeting. Second of all, it's interesting to take a look back a year later at the Panthers and Broncos together, since, of course, because they met in Super Bowl 50, there's always going to be a connection between those teams. And, you know, neither one of them made the playoffs last year. Both had certainly disappointing seasons. You know, the Broncos did finish over 500, but still, it wasn't what anybody wanted. And it's interesting to see kind of the states of transition in which both teams find themselves, although obviously for different reasons. Broncos, you know, have the coaching change, but the Panthers have made some changes, certainly in reaction to what was a very disappointing season at their end.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to week one last season, you know, in Denver, the Super Bowl rematch, the hullabaloo around that, and understandably so, and, you know, left that game thinking, you know, these are two really competitive teams again. You know, what a great battle to start out the season. Disappointing from the Panthers' perspective to lose like they did. But almost thinking, you know, maybe we'll see them again. Maybe not quite to that extent. But, you know, of course, it speaks in general to the parity of this league and how you can't count on anything from one year to the other. And the Panthers, from the Panthers' perspective, you know, Coach Rivera did everything I think humanly possible to guard against the Super Bowl hangover that we all know about, hear about, particularly seems to impact the loser of the game. But it was just one of those things where it just felt like they could never quite get things right, get it quite back on track after that Broncos game. And that was a tough way to start the season. Then, you know, the Michael Orr situation with him getting hurt at left tackle early in the year. And, you know, we all know in this league, like, there's not like teams have a zillion tackles in waiting when somebody like that goes down. And that began, you know, a lot of problems up front for the team. And, you know, Cam Newton was not the Cam Newton he was when he's MVP. And all of a sudden you look up and it's like, boy, this team's going to have to really pick it up to make the playoffs, much less make a deep playoff run. And, you know, as we know, as you know, from the Broncos side, it just did not quite happen. And here we are talking about, you know, using terms like, you know, rebuilding and, you know, getting back to Panthers football. It shows you how quickly things can change in this league, though.
So the rebuilding word is thrown out. That's really kind of interesting. Of course, when you look at some of the moves on the offensive line, you know, bringing in, you know, Matt Khalil on a big contract, I think bigger than a lot of people expected, you know, I guess you can say there's a little bit of rebuilding going on.
I mean, I should say specifically to the offensive line, rebuilding and retooling the offense. Retooling is another word because, again, it is kind of hard to overcome the injuries the Panthers had on the offensive line last year. I mean, Ryan Khalil missed half the season with an injury. Obviously, you talked about Orr, and that shifted Mike Remmers over to the left side. And then you have a Darrell Williams, a young guy on the right side, and it just – you know, they did the best they could, but it never really came together. So it's like, you know, very aggressive, concerted effort this year to put the team in position where, you know, even if circumstances go against the Panthers next year up front, they kind of have a better plan B, which, again, is not easily accomplished in this league because of the lack of talent, you know, talent and depth among tackles in particular in the league. And then the retooling has been a big theme, talking about, you know, how to better protect Cam and also how to better use him, protect him from himself, protect him from injury, you know, figure out a way to kind of get back to the identity of Panthers football I talked about, which is a power running game that does not necessarily rely on the quarterback like it has the last couple of years.
You talk about the offensive line. I think it's interesting. I think that's a big parallel between the two teams from Super Bowl 50, because although, you know, Ryan Coyle, outstanding center, it was an offensive line that maybe didn't have a lot of great parts, but because of Cam Newton's versatility and ability to get outside the pocket, it lessened the burden a little bit on the O-line, and the Broncos had Peyton Manning for those 4 years, and he's getting the ball out so quickly that you can get by with the kind of offensive line they had in 2015, where you had, you know, Ryan Clady out for the season. You had to put Ryan Harris in there, who you signed right after Clady got hurt. You know, you were shuffling guards because Evan Mathis and Luis Vasquez were both injured. But then Peyton Manning retires, and that quick ability to read the defense goes away. And you've got a bit more of a burden on the offensive line because Trevor Siemian is learning, and some of the issues really came to the fore. And so Broncos brought in Menelik Watson, brought in Ron Leary. Ron Leary, a bit more proven. Menelik Watson, I think, kind of like Matt Khalil, even though he's not a first-round pick, but a guy that's got a lot of athleticism and a lot of potential, has had some injuries, but certainly the pieces are there. But, you know, for the Broncos, they have to build their offensive line because they have young quarterbacks. For the Panthers, they have to rebuild their offensive line because Cam Newton simply can't be the mobile guy taking hits all the time. He's going to have to learn to be a pocket passer.
Yeah, because he's not quite as young as he has been. I mean, certainly not long in the tooth yet, but 6 years into the league. And, you know, specifically you look at last year, too, and it started with that. Well, it started the Super Bowl against the Broncos, and it continued week one against the Broncos. The hits he was taking, I mean, they were ones that would get your attention. I mean, this is a big man that, you know, has doled out his share of damage when it comes time to make contact with somebody. I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, the defensive player better be concerned about his health when they meet. But, I mean, but he's 6 years into the league now, and it does take a toll. The Panthers realize that. They realize, you know, that he's at his best, you know, when he's healthy, and that picking and choosing when to run him is just realistically the way to go. And, you know, part of that retooling is how to use him as a passer. You know, he's been really good with the deep ball for a while now. Last year, the receivers didn't consistently get the separation that you would hope for to make that happen. The line didn't hold up consistently enough for him to have a chance to make those deep throws. So they're kind of looking in another direction, too. What about the short throws? You know, that's kind of an extension of the running game that I think they're looking into that has interesting possibilities going forward. I mean, it seems like every time they've used a screen pass in my time covering the team, it's worked, but it doesn't seem like it's happened very often. I mean, I know it seems so simple, but I think, you know, it's a simple idea, but I think it's a good idea to try to kind of increase the short passing game, and, you know, that could play into how the draft plays out for this team as well. A lot of talk about bringing in another weapon at running back as a possibility at number 8. But, you know, at the end of the day, the other thing to keep in mind for the Panthers at least is Cam Newton's your quarterback. So, you know, if you kind of figure out these questions we're talking about, you got a former league MVP that can really lead this team to something special again.
Absolutely fascinating to me that you talk about the short passing game and you talk about the running game and a running back, because you're hearing that a lot in Denver as well. In fact, Vance Joseph is talking about Demaryius Thomas at his press conference at the breakfast on Tuesday. And he talks about wanting more from Demaryius Thomas. He wants him to be dominant, but he talks about how he wants to use him, how sometimes it's going to be in the slot. He wants to get back to using him on some of the short passes and the bubble screens that in the past have worked for him. So it's fascinating to hear you talk about that with Cam and the Panthers, because the Broncos are looking at that. And then at running back, now the Broncos, they have C.J. Anderson coming back. They expect him to be healthy. But so much buzz right now about Christian McCaffrey, the obvious connection because he's from the Denver area, Valor Christian High School. Father Ed McCaffrey, longtime Bronco, current radio announcer. But at the same time, even though he's a different kind of running back that I think the Panthers are looking at in that, because it's, you know, Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette are the guys that you're talking about, number eight perhaps. But McCaffrey certainly can open up things on the ground as well as in the passing game. And Vance Joseph saying some of the same things as Ron Rivera about, got to get the running game going to help the quarterback and help the entire offense.
Yeah, I mean, McCaffrey, that's interesting. The Panthers, not nearly the same number of ties, but, you know, Lance Taylor, the Panthers' new wide receivers coach, was McCaffrey's running backs coach at Stanford. So you have that tie.
Coach. So he was a receivers coach, and he's running backs coach now, and he's a receivers coach in Carolina. That says it all about Christian McCaffrey right there, the running back that can be a receiver, too.
I mean, obviously, yeah. So there's you have that connection. You know, Ron Rivera went to Stanford Pro Day. He doesn't go to that many Pro Days. I'm not trying to feed speculation here, but it's fun to just talk about stuff like this.
You might be breaking Broncos fans' hearts, though, if they're speculating about McCaffrey.
No, but it's funny. Like, you guys are picking 20th in the first round, right? So Panthers have moved up where they have a few more assets, you know. Wouldn't it be just kind of crazy, Broncos fan? Sorry, if the Panthers traded up to, say, I don't know, 19 with Christian McCaffrey still sitting there and said, hey, let's go with this guy.
They've traded to 19 before. I think John Fox made it and Marty Herney made a move to 19 when they got Jeff Otah back in 08.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, maybe we won't make that trade then, now that you put it that way.
Yeah, hey, Otah was good. Don't get me wrong, but he was hurt. That was the thing. And you know, there's a reason why he went after Ryan Clady in that draft. Those were two top tackles that year, and Otah had an injury history. He was more right tackle. Clady, outstanding left tackle for a long time before injuries eventually caught up to him, and now he's sitting there on the market. So looking ahead now, obviously teams have bounced back. They have made the Super Bowl and had that subpar season. They've come back, so it would not be out of the question to see a Broncos Panthers rematch in Super Bowl 52. Wouldn't surprise me at all. What do the Panthers need above all to get back there?
Well, yeah, I mean, Ron Rivera has not mentioned this recently, and understandably so. This is not the kind of thing you would talk about in the situation. But after Super Bowl 50, he referenced, you know, the Broncos as a team that 2 years earlier had been blown out in the Super Bowl, and then there they are back winning the Super Bowl. So I'm sure that thought's still in his mind, that that's a scenario that could play out for the Panthers. As far as, you know, the true key to it, I mean, I know we've talked all about offense, and I'm gonna keep it there because I do believe in the Panthers defense, much like I'm sure Broncos fans do believe in the Denver defense. Defensively, the Panthers have added some veteran pieces, as we were talking about before coming on, including Mike Adams, a guy who Broncos fans are familiar with, Julius Peppers, and Captain Munnerlyn coming back.
Broncos fans know Julius Peppers because arguably the greatest play of his career came in Denver back in 04 when he had the end zone interception off Jake Plummer and nearly went coast to coast. I still say it's the best moment of Rod Smith's career, going chasing Julius Peppers down inside the 5-yard line at the other end, never quitting on the play. Just great players making a great play on both ends. But yeah.
So, you know, defensively, you know, Luke Kuechly coming back from his concussion situation, like, obviously, you never know what's going to happen because in this league, you think, oh, you know, they've got this defensively and then see what happens. But anyway, my confidence is there with the defense. And, you know, this offense is removed from scoring a franchise record 500 points in 2015, having the league MVP, leading the league in scoring by a wide margin. And, I mean, I think they have the right idea with what they're thinking about doing offensively. So I think it's just if they're able to execute this plan that they see for the offense, that would be the key to them getting back and staying healthy. We always say that, and it's but again, much like the Broncos can relate, I mean, it's a tough division too that you're looking at, with, you know, just a couple years ago it was a maligned division. Now they've produced a Super Bowl team, a different Super Bowl team, two consecutive seasons. You know, you got to win in your backyard, and you know, the offense is going to be the key to that.
I think it will help both the Panthers and Broncos that they're not going against each other's divisions, because top to bottom you have no weaklings in either division. I mean, you look at the Chargers. I almost said San Diego. I'm still getting out of that habit. I have to say Los Angeles. But Chargers were the last place team, and you could argue they've got the best quarterback in the AFC West in Philip Rivers, which always gives them a chance. And the other thing, you know, with the Broncos, you mentioned, we've talked about their defense. We know what they can do. But getting that offense back on track, and you've got a tree, you've got four ex-Panther assistants on the Broncos staff, on the offensive staff. And the key is, I think, the three guys in Jeep Chris, tight ends coach, Mike McCoy, offensive coordinator, Jeff Davids, offensive line coach. The last time those three were together was actually in 08 with Carolina, one of the best Panthers teams, 12-4, and a very efficient offense. I believe it's one of 10 offenses in the last decade plus that was top five in yards per play in the pass, yards per play on the ground. It's the kind of balance certainly the Broncos want to find, and if they can do that, I think they too can be back. They can be back in the Super Bowl. We'll see.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it again in February. What do you think?
I'm down for that. Let's make it happen. Broncos, Panthers in Minneapolis. I think everyone would be happy with that. Brian, thanks as always, my friend.
All right, Andrew, enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.